We are good to go. This morning we are meeting with the Compensation Fund. which has got probably one of the worst audit outcomes I've encountered in the longest of time. Over the past 10 years, there have been 10 disclaimers and 2 adverse findings. And quite frankly, it's a situation which is just totally unacceptable and speaks to a collapse of internal controls and absolute chaos, to say the very least. And seemingly, there is just no movement or response insofar as the AG outcomes are concerned. The audit action plan is obviously something which does not exist. If it does, it's not taken seriously. The situation is just untenable. So that's why we're having this hearing this morning. So I'd like to welcome the honorable colleagues. And thank you very much for being available. I know we've had a marathon. We had National Skills Fund yesterday, and CETA, of course, yesterday did what they did. And this morning we've got the Compensation Fund. So, colleagues, welcome. And I would like to welcome the Minister of Employment and Labour and the Deputy Minister of Employment and Labour. Deputy Minister, I did receive the apology that you'd be leaving early, and thank you for sending that in good time. And the minister, of course, will be here. The DG and the commissioner of the department and the compensation fund also present, I'm told. But what I'll do now, colleagues, is that I'll hand over to the minister to make some initial remarks. And then Honorable Hadebe and Honorable Liz, we are in your hands this morning. Mazamba nisiyajabula ukubona. So we'd like to welcome you. So we'll do it in that direction, colleagues. Once the minister's done with the introductions and the brief remarks we'll make, we'll hand over to the Honorable Hadebe. And then when he's done, Honorable Liz, and then we'll come in to tie down and then map up the way forward. Minister, at the end of the meeting, you'll have an opportunity to make concluding remarks on the basis of the observations that you would have made. Honorable Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and the members of the committee, the Deputy Minister, the DG, the Commissioner of the Compensation Fund, and his officials and the members of the media, ladies and gentlemen. Chair, let me thank the SCOPA for this opportunity, and let me assure you that, the members of the committee, that we always take very seriously these engagements with Parliament, where the executive, individual ministers and officials are held to account for their handling of the public finances. If you allow me, Chair, let me just provide a brief overview of the situation regarding the compensation fund. The officials then will provide detailed account as requested by the SCOPA regarding the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure were reported in the 2019 and 2020 audit by the AG, for which the fund received a disclaimer. So, a very serious state of affairs, I must just come up front. A serious state of affairs, which has persisted for the last 8 years, and you're right, Chair, you were also saying the last 10 years at least. And so, what are the steps taken? Where are we now? And what are the plans going forward? The commissioner who's running those operations will explain in detail the steps taken to address the 1920 audit findings. In particular, the areas where progress has been made and equally where problems persist. They not just talk about the positives, the negatives. SCOPA will know that 2021 also, the audit report was, and after interacting with the AG, it also disclaimed in certain parts. And the commissioner will report on the progress of the previous year. And I understand that there was progress in cleaning up the registers for irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and in relation to reporting on the revenue and claims. He will also explain why progress has been limited in reporting on investment and prior areas or prior errors. And the commissioner will also report on the establishment of the clean audit task team, its work during the 2020-21 in enhancing the security and the financial controls and the action plans for the present year. And we'll also give assurances to SCOPA that the fund is committed to addressing the AG's findings. And from my side, Chairperson, let me just assure SCOPA of my commitment and that of the department to address the outstanding problems at the fund. We've taken the following actions. At our last meeting with SCOPA, with the DM and the DG, we resolved on a thoroughgoing organizational review of the compensation fund, although not relevant today, but also the UIF for that matter, to tackle the underlying systemic weaknesses. And I'm saying there are underlying systemic weaknesses related to the structure, related to the skills, related to the systems. Those are underlying. Part of this involves, therefore, that skills audit to ensure that we have the professionals required to manage this highly specialized environment, consisting of health insurance, medical aid and rehabilitation, as well as running a pension fund. These are the skills which we need. You can't be able to run that entity along the lines of the department. You need to recruit highly specialized skills in these areas. And as part of the organizational review, as well as addressing the skills at the compensation fund, we are discussing the possibility of applying to make the fund a full Schedule 3 entity, with the capacity to attract the kind of skills required in a specialized environment. I've recently met with the office of the AG in the wake of the latest audit report, that's 2021, and they are providing guidance in the outstanding problems. Part of this involves acting on the AG's key recommendation, and let me quote, because this is very important. The tone from the leadership should not tolerate non-performance and should strive to ensure controls are adhered to on a day-to-day activities. Management then must ensure they discharge their responsibility and safeguard the assets of the fund. Sufficient action should be taken to hold employees accountable for poor performance, that's consequent management, and limit the reliance which has been placed on consultants to assist with the day-to-day financial disciplines and preparations of the financial statements. There's an urgent need to review the controls environment of the fund, including the role of management, and subsequently strengthening the preventative and monitoring controls to identify the deficiencies early and react appropriately. There should be a discipline in ensuring that accurate and complete financial and performance records are maintained. We This will ensure financial statements and performance are supported by reliable evidence. And in this particular area, that's end the code. I'm very mad about this area. And additionally, the recent audit report identified areas of weak control, which gave rise to the risk of fraud and corruption. And I must put it up front, Chairperson, with the DG, I've said they must look for, they must start the processes so that we conduct a forensic audit in these at-risk areas. Because it can't be that we can't be able to trace documents, but monies were paid. We have to deal with this matter. So let me conclude by saying the department is committed to exercising oversight over the fund and addressing the deep-rooted systemic issues which have led to repeat disclaimers in the past. And we value the work of the SCOPA. So in terms of the action from me, it's the skills audit. In fact, it's the organizational review, the skills audit, the forensic audit, so that we can be able to deal with the rot there. That's what we want to go into. And I must mention Chairperson and the members, with the DM and the DG, we are committed to this regular monitoring of progress towards the implementation of the fund action plans. And in this, we will enlist the support of the Compensation Fund Internal Audit and the Compensation Fund Audit Committee, whose work was commended by the AG. But as to why those were not implemented, it's going to be exposed very soon when we deal with the investigation, because there were very important recommendations which were supposed to be implemented. But as I close, Chairperson, I want to say we have to monitor this now on a monthly basis. We have to have reports on a monthly basis, even if it means both the portfolio committee and the SCOPA are demanding or want us to appear on a quarterly basis, so be it, to report against the plans and the targets to the SCOPA and the portfolio committee, and even the select committee and the office of the AGSA. And we have agreed with the office of the AGSA that constant reporting and then them giving advice is very key to see if there's progress. But the details will come from the DG and the commissioner in particular, in relation to particular areas. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All right. Thank you very much, Minister, for that. Just one housekeeping rule. For those who will be speaking and responding, please make sure that your camera is on, because we are streaming on Parliament's platforms across the spectrum. So, Honorable Hatebe, we are in your hands. You will let us know. It's 9:45. Let's see how far you are at 9:30.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Oh, no, just one second. Sorry.
All right.
Minister, please introduce your delegation so we know who's here. That's the only thing. So Honorable Hatebe and the rest of us and Honorable Liz know who we are talking to. Sorry about that, BH.
Honorable Minister.
Can we get the introduction of the delegation?
My apologies. I was talking to myself. Sorry. I was saying, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, Muloi, is here. The DG Lamati is here. Commissioner Mafata of the Compensation Fund. We also have the Chief of Staff, George Mudumela. We have our liaison officer in Parliament, Thando Wababa. We also have who else, DG? The DG must help me. That's the list which I have from our side. Unless I miss some people, DG.
I think that is sufficient. I think the persons who are here are here. The Honorable Hadebe, or just is internal audit present?
Oh, DG, is the internal audit present?
Yes, they are present, Chair.
Okay, perfect. Right, Honorable Hadebe, over to you, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, colleagues, Minister and the Deputy and your entire delegation. Chair, I'm pleased to hear the tone of your voice. You have recovered from yesterday, which is good. We're happy. Minister, you have become a permanent feature into SCOPA. For the past decade, 10 years, Minister, your department entity or fund has been in red. Coincidentally, that coincide with your political allegiance. I don't know why. But that on its own, it's a serious area of concern for us that a fund, we regard you as an insurance company because you're dealing with funds on behalf of companies. For 10 years, Minister, you've received adverse and disclaim audit findings. Yet when it comes to your leadership structure, the stability, most of your senior executives have been there for more than 5 years. Now, as close I get to a scale of CIO Yisa Inom, with the exception of two executives who are currently acting, but still there is no improvement whatsoever. The situation is getting from bad to worse. And I'm trying to describe the current status in the fund. And I'm going to say this with utmost humility. Excuse my language. But the situation in the fund, it's rotten to the core. That's the only best description that is befitting to the current status quo. The fund is rotten to the core. I'd like to get a sense because from the fourth administration, Honorable Chair, to the fifth administration and currently to the sixth administration, the fund has been appearing before SCOPA and nothing has changed. I think it is high time that we put our foot down and take drastic measures and decision to change the current status quo. Insanity is doing same thing over and over and expecting different results. You have managers who have been part of the system and nothing has changed. I want, Chair, for a start to get a sense, because when I and the composition of the fund, something did not augur well with me. You have an advisory board, you have a commissioner, you have a DG. In terms of accountability, Honorable Minister, can you please tell us in terms of your structure, is it working? Is it yielding positive results? I'm asking this based on the issue yesterday, Chair, if you recall, that was raised by Minister Nzimande in terms of having an accounting authority who's an accounting officer as well. Now, this is what I also picked up here. You have an advisory board, you have a commissioner, you have a DG. Let me start with that aspect. I'm not too sure who's going to answer, whether the minister or the DG. The structure, is it composed or structured in a manner that gives oversight and accountability that produce positive results? That's my first question. So we are going to have an interactive session, Minister, and your delegation. I'll ask one question, you respond, and then we take it from there. Before we deal with key and critical issues of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure and funds that seem to be disappeared without accountability and this duplication of funds. Can I just get an answer on my first part?
I agree that the fund is rotting to the core. It can't continue to have disclaimers after disclaimers. But adding to your question, is it as a result of what? Is it neglect? Is it corruption? Is it structural issues? I think it's a combination of the different factors, Jefferson. I'm saying there are basic controls which you need to have, which have been neglected. That's neglect. But I won't definitely say corruption, but I suspect corruption, the forensic audit, can be able to help us that. Because why are certain things not being followed? Why they have always been there, and then there are documents? But what is also clear, Chairperson, some of the problems there are structural. You're sitting with an entity which is operating far from the department. Of course, the DG is an accounting officer, but all the operations are separate from the department. It has a board which is advisor, which cannot take any responsibility. And we think that that's one of the areas which has to be addressed. That's why I was saying we are applying now, or we are having discussions on how do we make this a Schedule 3A, which should have a full board with fiduciary duties. But part of that is for such an entity to be able to recruit the proper skills. Because you're not going to run this along the departmental line and think that an insurance like this one, which needs technical and financial skills, can just be run along the lines of the department. I think as part of what we call the organizational review, we want to dive deep into the structural issues. We think also they do contribute, but we can't just hide behind that. There are areas of neglect which deals with the control which should have been done properly. And we must investigate why some of the things are persisting. And why don't you have documentation which is backing up the payments which are being done? That's what I can say. I'm not sure if the DG would want to also make an addition, or the Deputy Minister and the DG.
Yeah, so still on that, I think you would agree with me that you don't need a forensic investigation for basic controls. You don't have to waste money, institute a forensic for basic controls. Those that are responsible for basically record keeping, payments that cannot be, what has been done in that regard? Who are these responsible persons who ought to have instituted consequence management and did not play his part? What has been done? We need those individuals. We're following money at the same time following individual who did not. We can't, like I said, it can be as things stand. So in responding to that question, also touch base on the lack of basic controls. I mean, these executives are rated on the higher scale. They're getting money monthly, but for decades we're not seeing results. Can you turn things around with the current crop that is there? Are they equal to the task? Are they doing their work?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. That's why I was talking skills audit, but we must be systemic and also systematic when we're dealing with these issues. I am of the view, but I think the investigations which we're going to do might be able to help me, that the current crop, unless something is done, I don't know whether it's correct to say training, but people have been appointed in key strategic positions. They are deputy directors, they are directors, they are chief directors, COOs, CFO, up to the commissioner. They are supposed to be having these skills to deal with the basic issues. But I don't think they are up to task. That's a matter which we will have. We must follow immediately, and I think that's what the AG, that's what the AG is saying. But there's no consequent management. And if people are failing to deal with very, very basic issues. And I think you're right on those areas, on the basic controls. And I think the AG's report has gone very deep on these issues, what has not been done. And so, with the DG, we have said, let them work with the commissioner and tell us who are the officials who are responsible for this, so that we are able to deal with them and engage in the necessary processes to make them account for this rot which you are referring to, Chairperson. But maybe I can allow the DG to make his additions in this particular area. Through your chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and the honorable members. Chair, I agree you don't need to institute forensic audit to deal with lack of controls. But if you're dealing with systemic challenges that we've been dealing with at the compensation fund, I think you do need to have that kind of a forensic audit. The audit that we're referring to that we've been brought to SCOPA for is a 2019 financial year. Now, during the course of that year, all the transactions that are in question were on the old system that we're using, that is called Umehluko. Now, part of the plans that we've put together, that the fund put together, was to move from an old system into a new system. Now, in the process of diagnosing what was the problem, it was made clear that the system that we're using was the problem. It didn't have a compensating controls to be able to assist the fund to process the transactions properly. So we moved into the new system. Now, what would be interesting for us is that, especially for me, is that having been given the assurances that the new system will deal with quite a number of the controls that were not there, and will eliminate a number of the findings that that were raised by AG, it will be interesting to see whether that indeed has happened, because then it will give us the basis, it give me as a basis to act on the failures by management not to do what they were supposed to do, because a number of the repeat findings were systems related, given the fact that things were done manually, record keeping continued to be a problem. So the intention is to act on the AG findings and hold officials that did not do what they're supposed to do accountable. Thank you, sir.
Can you also respond to the structural issues in relation to my first question? Is it giving you the desired outcome? Your advisor?
Yeah, it is not giving us the desired outcomes. And that's why the minister made the point that we're looking at making sure that the fund becomes a full Schedule 3A entity. It is a 3A entity, but that is linked to the that is tied to the department, and that is tied to the department due to the how the act that controls the fund or the administrative legislation that gives rise to the existence of the compensation fund. It ties the compensation fund to the department. For instance, the compensation fund literally doesn't have its own employees. All the employees that are providing or that work for the fund are the employees of the department that are seconded to the fund and that are paid by the department and claim the money to the compensation fund. So that arrangement is really not not working for us. And to show that it's really not working, we have been struggling to appoint highly qualified people into key positions in the fund. And that is why we resorted in training our own people, getting the learners train them so that we can acquire the skills that we have. Because if we continue to if the fund continues to be to be under the public service regulations that are very, very limiting and does not provide space for for professionalism or for us to appoint professional people at a competitive packages, will continue to experience the challenges that we have. So that's why the minister made the point that we need to move into a full-scale 3A entity, so that even issues of systems and all that, we're not constrained by the policies that currently exist. We have to do everything through, for instance, on systems, we have to do everything through CETA. And as a transactional department, we cannot afford to have instances where our systems are down. And that's what, these are the realities that we find ourselves in.
Thanks, DG. Which brings me to my question in terms of your record keeping. I'm interested to know at this current juncture, how do you store and keep your document? Because there is lack of assessment when it comes to documentation. That's one. And I also want you to respond to the issue of return of earnings. Why there's currently a backlog in processing the return of earnings? Are all the employers registered? It seems as if there is no compelling reason that forced employers to register. Do you have an enforcement unit in place that will ensure that all employers are registered? For example, we all submit annual tax return with SARS. It is a known fact, and it's compelling for each and every one of us to comply with SARS requirement. Is that the case when it comes to the fund? Are all employers registered? And if not, what are the contributing factors that leads to the employers not registering? Are they compelled by law? Yes, they are compelled by law. But is that being practiced in reality? Just give us a sense on those three questions: the issue of ROEs, the issue of record keeping, your current modus operandi in terms of storage and keeping of records, and the issue of registration of the employers. Thank you.
Chair, on the record keeping, I indicated that we initially, maybe let me just go back a little bit. Prior to 2014, everything at the compensation fund was done manually. So record keeping was done manually, and that's why when you visit the compensation fund, you'll see all files strewn all over the place, because things were done manually and there was no proper record keeping. And that is why we can't find some of the documents that we're looking for now, because of the manner in which things were done. So in the middle of 2014, the department moved, I mean, the fund moved it, onto a new system, Umehluko. So a number of these documents were scanned onto the into the system, Umehluko system. However, this not everything was fully automated. So that is why you could still find documents that were, that you still find a situation where if you're looking for documents now, you can't find them, because everything is still, some of the documents were left on the legacy systems. They were not migrated onto the new system. So when the fund moved onto Umehluko, so what they would do, they would, employers would then scan documents onto the system and onto the Umehluko system. And because it has been the custom to keep, or for employers to submit WCL1 and WCL2, which are the documents that are required to report an incident and also submit the claim, the fund will keep those, and when AG comes, they will produce those documents. So when the fund moved over to the Umehluko in an attempt to automate all the systems, they did away with that, with having some of the hard copies. And that created a problem, because you now, even though you have these things automated, you don't have the hard copies to show to the AG that this is the source document that you that was used. So in the new system, the COMP is a system that has been developed. So that has been taken into account, and the system is fully automated. The source document is attached to the document that is scanned, and that's how the system has been configured to make sure that there's proper record keeping, and there's nothing that falls into a crack. Now, but you still have issues with regards to the old legacy information that is not available, and that is why in the audit findings, there's still reference to the old information or the old information that is not available. So the backlog on the ROE, the return on earnings, it is a matter that AG has raised, and this has been in the issue for quite a long time. And it's been caused by one of the biggest challenges that we experienced was that you have the classification of sectors, which I think we had just over 100 subclasses, and you'll remember that some of the employers And that's why you have RMA and FEMA. Some of the employers in the subclass, iron and steel and construction were given to those two mutuals. Now, this proved to be a serious problem because a number of the companies were registered in this class, and yet they are doing something that is completely different, and they never updated their documents on the system. And that's why you find now we have a lot of employers who are coming to us, even to me personally, to say, we've been registered as a construction company, and yet we're not constructing anything. And over the years, we've had companies who wanted to come and get refunds on the basis that they were incorrectly classified. So we have changed that now. The minister published after a lengthy period at NEDLAC, which took about 3 years, a new classification which moved us from 100 and something classes to just 13 classes, and that makes life much more easier. And we're only implementing that in this financial year 2021. So that's where we are, and we think that this will go a long way in making sure that it improves the situation. And now on whether, you know, we are compelling employers to register with a compensation fund. Obviously, Chair, the Honorable Hadev has indicated that there is a legislation. Legislatively, they are compelled. But we are unable to go to every workplace and make sure that they are employers do register on the compensation fund system. We've had discussions with SAS to make sure that in a similar way that they collect for unemployment insurance funds, they also assist us. And the discussions are still underway, and SAS has highlighted the fact that the compensation fund operations are a bit complicated. We need to have a further discussion to see how we can align the work that is done by the compensation fund with the system that SAS is using, so that they're able to collect on behalf of the compensation fund. But I agree with you that the lack of collecting, making sure that every employer collects, has an impact on the revenue that the compensation fund collects. And that is why AG has raised the concerns that they have raised. The compensation fund commissioner, Chair, can add to the points that I've made. Thanks.
Are there any additions?
Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members. I think the DG has captured the essence of the issues that we've had in the fund with regard to the control environment. I think it's safe to say that I think over the last 5 years, we have been implementing a plan which included the replacements of the systems, as well as automating a number of issues related to submission of ROEs and managing the revenue aspects of the fund, in addition to the claims. We have seen also a lot of policy changes over the last 24 months aimed at addressing some of the control weaknesses that have been identified that existed within our revenue management space. And we will start to see the impact of some of those policy changes over the coming audit years. Thank you, Chair.
Now, thanks, Commissioner. In relation to employers who are active at the fund, they're supposed to be assessed regularly, but this does not happen. So can you tell us what are the reasons for this not taking place? And secondly, who are the officials responsible? Have they been held accountable for non-compliance? As I've indicated, this is an interactive session. I ask a question, you follow with the response. My question is in relation to active employers at the fund who are supposed to be assessed regularly, and they are not. What are the reasons contributing to such non-compliance? Who are these officials that are involved, and what has happened to such?
So the assessment process follows the submission of return of earnings. So the big problem we have is the problem of compliance from the employers themselves. So if an employer has not submitted a return of earnings, such an employer cannot be assessed because we don't have a return to assess. So we have found that though we have a set of active employers who may have submitted returns based on the definition of an active employer, but if in subsequent years these employers do not submit returns, and such employers then are not able to be assessed. So one of the things that has been done with the department was the creation of a payroll audit unit within the inspections of the department. So this payroll audit unit, it has been established to then assist us to audit and to be able to go and inspect such employers who do not comply. So the unit has been in existence for the last 12 months or so. So we have then been starting to give a number of cases to them so that they can then go and inspect and check on these employers. And obviously once these employers come in and submit their returns, we then are able to assess them. One of the weaknesses that existed was that accounting standards do allow us to be able to make some provisions for employers who would have been registered with the fund but have not been assessed and submitted returns. However, I think the biggest problem has been that these provisions have not been raised in the correct manner that they need to be raised. And part of it was due to issues related to skills and some of the system limitations. But I think a lot of these we've now addressed with some of the enhancements that we've done in our systems. So it should not be a major issue going forward, the issue related to raising provisions for such employers.
Now, thanks. In relation to your skills audit, you've mentioned the minister and the DG spoke about the skills audit. Have you at this current juncture conducted the skills audit to verify or ascertain that you have indeed the necessary and requisite skills, or the current staff complement not equal to the task, which is obviously the case, but have you proactively conducted the skills audit? And what have you found when you concluded that process? If you have not concluded why you have not started, also tell us, when are you planning to conduct the skills audit?
Thank you. So at the beginning of the implementation of our turnaround plan, the first thing that we did was a skills audit to determine what are the skills gaps that exist in the compensation fund. It is based on that skills audit that we then started the restructuring of the compensation fund. The minister in the beginning spoke about the compensation fund being a pension fund, a health administrator, a insurance. So,
Commissioner, please also give us dates. We want to assess whether your turnaround is yielding positive results. So when you say to me, we have conducted the skills audit, tell us when, so that your response indicates to me and ought to reflect improvement. So without dates, I can't be able to assess whether there's improvement or not. From what I've seen and from what is before us, you are still the same as you were 10 years ago. So give us dates.
So in 2015, 2016, that's when we did the skills audit. And following the results of the skills audit in 2016, we then started a restructuring process, redesigned the whole structure of the compensation fund, which was then approved by the minister in 2017. And in terms of this, then it created additional capacity that we required in finance. Part of the gaps that the skills audit had found was that we also lack skills in the clinical as well as the health related skills to administer medical claims, as well as some of the actuarial skills that we lacked in the fund. So when we redesigned the structure and restructured, we then created these components within the fund. So we have filled the post over the course of the 2017 until 2019 year. So the structure that we have now and the people that we have now have been appointed as a result of the skills audit that we've done. But the DG has touched on an important point, that the fact that we appoint people in the compensation fund in terms of the public service regulation, even though we come with the right structure and skill requirements, the fact that we are not paying a salary that similar skills would attract in the private sector. So that makes it difficult for us to be able to attract some of the skills that we've identified that we are lacking.
So in essence, you have attracted the wrong people. You have conducted skills audit, you have recruited accordingly. What skills, expertise and experience are these people bringing except maladministration? If we are in 2021 now, we are saying you have dealt with the issue of skills in 2017, 2019, 2021. What is it that they are bringing to the table except maladministration? What is before us is a clear and complete a broken, rotten business. Then if the skills audit has been conducted, why do we still having missing document? I'm confused, because I thought we would propose a skills audit and that has been taken care of. We still face with a similar situation. I think, Chair, here we need really as a scoper to propose that that there should be a full forensic audit investigation in terms of this missing document. If there are still issues that dates 10 years ago, yet the skills aspect and the right caliber has been recruited to the fund, what then do you expect from these people if nothing positive has been produced? Please share the light with me. Perhaps I'm missing something.
Honorable Hatebe, so the challenges of the fund. So the skills audit was addressing the people issues, but the challenges of the fund also include system issues and process issues. So part of the things that we needed to do once we got the skills was then to look at addressing some of the systemic issues or the system issues that we had. So a lot of weaknesses in controls, in some cases even absence of such controls, was also because of the systems that we had, and they may have been configured at the time when the fund did not have the relevant skills to make sure that these systems are configured adequately. So what has been done then over the last 3 years has been this process of, number one, developing a new claims management system with all the added controls and the required controls that we need. In addition, also we've then, because we had an existing financial management system that we're using, that also required some major enhancements on it to be able to make sure that we address some of these issues. So that's why we started with getting the right people on the bus, and then once that is what had happened, we then started making sure that we then address these. Without some of these skills that we were able to attract, clinical skills and so on, we would not have been able to have developed the kind of claim system that we've now developed in the new system.
That's precisely that. You have recruited these skills and expertise in order for you to assist in developing proper systems in place. Now, those systems have not yet yielded positive results. So the question is really, what needs to be done in order for the systems to produce the desired outcome? You have recruited people, and those people are charged with certain responsibility. And I'm sure one of those is to ensure internal controls, effective systems are put in place. We are told that the system that you have been using has not been producing results. You are now You have now opted to get another system. System is operated by individuals and within the value chain and the process. So each and every individual is responsible for achieving certain results. And that has not been forthcoming. So we can't, from time to time, blame the system as if the system operates automatically. It's not controlled by individuals.
So one of the we implemented the claim system was implemented at the end of the 2019-2020 financial year. So we were unlikely to even see the impact of it on the audit report that is in question. The AG has started the audit for the 2020-2021 financial year, and it's the financial year in which we used the system for the full year. So all claims that we processed have been processed using the new claims management system. We are expecting a different audit outcome with regards to claims in the current year because of the changes that we have made in the system. The big challenge is having to then go back and clean up the prior period issues that would have been raised in the old systems, because some of them would then still have an impact on some of the items that are sitting on our balance sheet. The minister earlier on referred to the clean audit task team that we had established. So part of the work that we're doing through that team is then looking at all these prior period issues and working with management to make sure that we then correct those that are not correctable, and the ones that are not correctable, look at ways that we can then try and clear them off of our books.
So you're saying with your current system, the issues that have been raised by AG, for an example, that there are non-dependents over 18 years who are receiving monthly pensions because of your inadequate control system around claims. So are you saying that has been taken care of? Have you also dealt with the responsible individual and officials for this corrupt practices where you had non-dependent over 18 years receiving monthly pension?
So it is completely possible for an over 18-year-old to get pension. So in the findings, where, for example, you could not then be able to produce, because if a person is over the age of 18, and then that person is still attending school, such a beneficiary is entitled to continue to receive a dependent pension from the compensation fund. So part of the big issue was the record keeping issue that the DG has spoken about, which we are addressing. Part of the other issue that we've done when we moved and migrated to the new system was to migrate the data from the old systems to the new system. But going with the migration of the data to the new system was also the cleansing of such a data, where we needed to refresh some of the old IDs that were issued in prior years, where a person has been a pensioner, maybe even before the new ID system was utilized. So a lot of those cleanup has been done, the link up with the Home Affairs database to make sure that when people are captured on the system, we can be able to retrieve the information from Home Affairs. So all those things are now done, are in the new system.
So when you're saying, are you no longer paying money to deceased individuals? Have you cleared it? And how much have you lost in that aspect? The AG also find out you've been paying money to deceased individuals. So be specific when you're saying we have cleanup. I'm just highlighting specific issues, but there's more to it than what I'm highlighting to you. I was just giving you a case in point so that you understand the issue that we're referring to when we talk about your malfunctioning systems and weak internal controls.
Certainly, sir. So we have cleaned up. We now in the process of looking. We're cleaning up our pensioners database, for example, so that we can determine how much of the pensioners database is no longer a valid pensioners, either because of either age or because of the fact that the persons are no longer in existence. So those issues we've eliminated completely.
Can you confirm? Can you say with authority that you are no longer paying deceased individual?
We are no longer paying deceased individuals.
How much have you lost in the process?
We don't have a quantified
value. Have you quantified that value? Have you held a responsible official to account? Have you effected consequence management in that regard?
We haven't quantified because we're still interrogating all the issues that have been raised by the AG with regard to this issue. Because not
how,
everything...
How do you know that we are no longer paying them? You have not been able to quantify them.
I've indicated the link that we have now, that our ICD database that we integrate to, that is managed through the department. That database has been refreshed, and which is the database that feeds all systems of the department with Home Affairs data. So that work has been done.
So you could be able to tell us how much we've lost and how many deceased individuals have you been paying?
So well, once we're done with the quantification, yes.
Come again?
Once we're done with the quantification, which we will be able to do.
So at this current juncture, you don't know the extent and the loss that was incurred?
No, we don't, sir.
And when can we expect such a report?
So this is part of the work that the Clean Audit Task Team is busy with. As I said, we're trying to correct all the prior year period errors. So we've set ourselves until end of this financial year to clean up the prior period errors.
There has to be milestone projections and time frames. You but break it down into achievable targets.
We are busy with the process, the planning process, and the diagnostic process. So we should be able to submit. We will submit a plan to the committee by the end of June of what are the milestones of the different areas that we are going to look at in the priority road areas.
So in terms of these controls, you are giving us surety that a report will be forthcoming to SCOPA in June.
Yes, sir.
With all the details, including the consequence management that has been taken if anyone found to have been in the wrong in terms of non-compliance.
So I was committing to the plan. You asked the question around the what are the time frames for dealing with this, and I indicated that we're doing that assessment now in terms of what is the work that needs to be done to correct the prior period errors, and the team is putting together that plan so that we know what is prioritized in the next 6 months, in the next 9 months or 12 months and so on. So we will be able to submit that plan at the end of June.
But
the
and work
it will be part of the plan. So once we've established and we know who's responsible for what activity, who was accountable, that consequence management will then follow.
So it's possible that we are sitting with officials who are continuing doing malpractices, maladministration, and they have not been identified. Until such time where you arrive at that point, those people would continue with the maladministration and corruption practices that they're currently doing. Is that a possibility? Right now, we can't tell, we can't for certain say these are the people responsible for the status quo within the fund.
So I would not even say that it's because of officials, because a lot of these issues are system issues, systemic issues. We pay and we have people that exist in the system.
But who drives the system?
Based on the system.
Who recommends the system? Who administers the system?
It's process management, yes.
Yes. Now, when the system fails, who must account? Should we charge the system?
No. It should be those that are responsible if the issues have been raised and we've not addressed them. So definitely we need to answer.
There are basic controls here. I want to get those officials. We're talking about decades of rot here. Give us a sense of comfort that you are dealing with these individuals.
Where officials have found to be...
There can't be double payment. There can be a payment to people that have passed on. You can't use the dead to amass wealth and there is no consequence. And you can't blame the system for such. System is administered, run, processed by individuals. You deliberately choose to punch in details of a person who is no more, amassing wealth, because that money does not go to the grave. It goes to someone's account, and that money gets consumed by someone. It is not consumed by the deceased, or that does not go to the grave. I'm saying show a sense of urgency that you also appreciate that what is currently happening should not continue. I have not dealt with irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. I'm coming to that. All my colleagues will touch base on that. But give us a sense that the basic controls, you are dealing with those. Like I said earlier on, you don't need a forensic investigation. You don't need a team of experts to tell you this official has been not complying. If senior leaders are tolerant to non-compliance, the attitude for your subordinate won't change at all. By the look of things, it seems as if you are tolerant to non-compliant. Decades of disclaim adverse audit finding. I was hoping this time around you have said heads have rolled in this department. Heads must roll. People must account for their actions.
So, Honorable Hadebe, where people have been found on the wrong and the people have contributed to losses for in the fund, if it's internal officials, disciplinary action is being taken against them. And there's been a number of dismissals that we've had. If it's external parties, we have open cases, there's active cases that are open with the South African Police Service. Some matters have even gone before the courts with some people having been found guilty. So that work is being done.
So who paid deceased individuals?
So I want to give context to the issue of the deceased individuals. So we have, once a person has been declared permanently disabled, such a person is entitled to a monthly COID pension from the compensation fund. Or if a person, if the injury resulted in a fatality, then the dependents of such a person would then be paid a monthly pension, a survivor's pension from the compensation fund. The issue that the AG had found was that in some instances you found that even though you had been continuing to pay pension over the years because a person was alive, it may be that for a month or so, if a person is deceased, the pension was paid because either the system had not then been updated with the information from Home Affairs to alert the department that a specific person is now deceased. I think those are the circumstances. There is no claims where, for example, we'll be processing a claim of somebody who's deceased. In some cases, you have instances where cases are clear fraudulent cases where either a deceased person's ID has been, or another person's ID has been hijacked, and you find that a claim has been processed based on a hijacked ID. So there is no deliberate, we haven't found so far any deliberate action of an official who then goes out to want to capture a claim of a deceased person and pay such a deceased person. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson? Honorable Chair?
The Honorable Hadebe?
Yes, I wanted to check, do we have SIU present in our meeting?
SIU should be here, yes, and the AG.
I also want to get a sense from them whether or not they have been dealing
with... All right, that's the Delarude. Yes.
Can we get an input from SIU in relation to these issues? If they have engaged or attempted to pursue the shenanigans, for lack of a better word, and corruption that has been taking place.
Right, SIU?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and good morning to the Minister, Deputy Minister, the DC, and all the members. I just want to, on that question, confirm that we have not received any request to investigate any matter at the compensation fund at this point, but we are obviously willing to assist wherever we can. If the Auditor General report can be made available to the SIU, we would certainly review it. And the DG is aware of the fact that we are currently doing work within the UIF and the Labour Activation Program. So we will certainly take this on, review it, and then if there's sufficient evidence, we would then recommend or request a proclamation from the President. And we would certainly be willing to assist there. Thank you, Jay.
All right. No, that's fine. Let's do this. Honorable Hatte, on that SIU, let's hold that in abeyance.
Yes, yes, yes.
We will see how we incorporate the SIU into the roadmap moving forward at the end of the meeting. Let's just hold the SIU aspect in abeyance momentarily.
All right. No, that's cool. Thanks, Chair. I would like to deal with the irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure so that I can also give my colleague time to engage. You have not been acting on your irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, and some of the expenditure, it's difficult for AG to get the sense of the extent of the irregular expenditure. Can you give us a sense and take us through what has been done in relation to irregular and fruitless expenditure in relation to the National Treasury guidelines?
Part of the work that we've been doing, so we've been working on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure register and the irregular expenditure register now for a number of years. Part of the biggest challenge that we had is that, and the DG spoke about it, the fact that historically the compensation fund has not been very good with regard to record keeping and managing records. So we found a situation where the register has a number of cases that you can neither confirm that these are indeed supposed to be on the register or they are not supposed to be on the register, because you don't know the background why they led to being to them being in the register. Some of them may have been as a result of an audit finding by the AG in prior years, but there wasn't enough done by management at the time to interrogate some of these findings to confirm whether these are indeed irregular or not, or if it was a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, if this was or not. So we then inherited a situation where we've had to clean up this particular register. We have been working to try, because one of the things we've also then been struggling to even reconcile it back to the amounts that we have been disclosed in the annual financial statements. In the last year, in this current financial year that just ended, we've actually then succeeded in trying to clean up this register, in trying to tally what is in the register with what is in the annual financial statement, save for just a few transactions that we're still trying to investigate that do not make sense, that we can't find. But when we look at the register in total, the big problem is also that a large number of these cases, you don't have any supporting documentation that supports it. And that's part of the work that we've been trying to do and in consulting National Treasury to try. At first, we then took the approach of saying, if we can't substantiate a lot of these cases and we can't also find supporting documentation to support whether these are irregular or not, we should then apply for a mass condonation of these cases and write-off of these cases so that we can then focus on items that we're able to have records and investigate properly. The advice that came back from National Treasury was that we need to look at each case individually and try and find. So we then had to go back and try and see what information we can find on each of these cases so that we can then submit them to National Treasury individually. So now, having cleaned the register now, we are now starting that process to now start submitting these individually to the to National Treasury. But there is very little, there is no, in fact, not even a little, but there's no hope that a lot of these cases will be able to find records. There are a few cases that make up a substantial majority of these cases. When we look at the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, for example, there is one major case that contributes to this, which is a matter that has already been referred to the state attorney for recovery of a fruitless and wasteful expenditure relating to a payment that was made to a contractor, which was deemed to be a payment in respect of a breach of contract. And then we have also a number of advance payments that were made by the fund in 2012 to medical service providers, as well as some of the third-party agents who represent medical providers. And these, we are now attempting to recover these monies that were paid because they were deemed to be irregular. And we have already started processes with the state attorney for civil proceedings against the parties. Two of the parties have already agreed to a settlement agreement with the fund. So now the process that we're dealing with is then trying to identify those claims that would be used as part of the settlement agreement to be able to net them off against the irregular. But in the main, most of the cases, we don't have any information that helps us to be able to move forward with them.
There are several contracts of Liquid Telecoms that were entered into without a valid contract in 2018. So I just want to understand, how were they appointed without a valid contract? And who are those service providers?
So Liquid Telecom was a service provider that was appointed, and there was a contract in place for Liquid Telecoms to render data lines to the department as a whole. The issue that led to the irregular transaction there was the fact that the contract expired and it was not renewed because the department was moving its lines to CETA. So the party, there was a head of ICT in the compensation fund at the time who was responsible for managing all these contracts. And there has been consequence management that was implemented against the official and with a final written warning that was issued against the responsible official.
When the contract expires, how much were they paid? And how were they paid without a contract? The expiry of contract means the agreement ends. There is no longer legal binding document between the department and the service provider. For how long did that continue? How much was it paid? Who are these officials involved in this transaction? That was my question. You have concluded the case. Therefore, it's no longer a matter in progress or pending the outcome. Give us details. And so, in terms of the monetary value, how much was paid in relation to such invalidity?
So the main, in the contract, when a contract expires, the contract would state that it would be if there's no notice served on the service provider, or either party serves notice, then the contract continues on a month-to-month process, so which is what the case was. The correct process that needed to have been followed in such case would have been for the director ICT then to take the matter to the bid adjudication committee and formally then request extension of the contract, which is what was not done, which is what made the matter irregular. I'm still trying to just look at the figure that we paid on Liquid Telecoms. So it's I think we just looked at it, it's just about R1 million that was paid, just over R1 million that was paid to Liquid Telecoms. So the contract was not terminated and the payment was made, because without the payment, for example, then it would have meant that the services of the department, the online services of the department, would also then shut down, because this was the contract relating to the data lines that the department uses to communicate between the different buildings and CETA.
And that's not as if you didn't know that the contract will come to its expiry date on a particular time. So prior approval and authorization from a delegated authority ought to have been sought well in advance.
Great, sir.
And that did not happen.
That did not happen. Hence, so, the direct ICT had to be held to account.
By a mere letter of warning.
That's the sanction that was deemed appropriate at the time, sir.
Okay. And tell us about this month-to-month contract with First Property for more than 20 million.
So First Property also was a service provider that, so the initially the compensation fund used to run, to have, because our processes were manual, so we had massive loads of paper that was stored, files that were to be stored in different warehouses. So First Property was one of those service providers that then housed the properties or the documents of the compensation fund. So in a similar manner to Liquid, also there the contract expired and it was not approved. There was no regular processes that were followed then to get this extended, and it continued on a month-to-month while the fund was retrieving the documents from the warehouses, because we had already started a process of an electronic storage of documents after having appointed service provider to do so. So even there, we have, because this dates back to a contract, also dates back to a couple of years back. So what we've done, we've then requested an investigation into this, and following the investigation, we'll then be able to hold the responsible officials to account. So no action has been taken against any official as yet with regard to that.
And I suspect it will be a letter of a written warning. Why are you not negotiating the lease prior to their expiry date? Project management, basic stuff. You know when the lease or the contract will expire. What are you supposed to say? How is it in the isolated events demonstrated to your case? So it again speaks to issue of senior management being tolerant to non-compliance. You are saying in this matter, you have not even started with the process of identifying the responsible person. $20 million gets paid month to month, month to month. Do you also struggle with issues of project management?
I think contract management was a big, major issue that we saw as a weakness and a gap that we had in the fund. So which we are working with the CFO now to address, to make sure that this instance, I think if you look at it for issues related to properties as well as Liquid Telecoms, we haven't had major issues related to extension of contracts that have been done irregularly.
When has this issue of affordability started? And why have you not acted up to now? When did their contract expire? And when did you start with a month-to-month contract with them?
So the contract would have expired around 2018, but the matter was brought to the it came to my attention when there was a request made for the payment of the outstanding rentals for that period, which was in 2020. And I think it's at that time that we then said we must have a formal investigation into the whole matter so that those that are responsible should then be held to account.
So from 2018 to date, you've been paying First Property on month-to-month basis, and you have not concluded an investigation.
The contract
expired in 2018. You're still paying them month-to-month. You have not
paid them.
Yes.
We paid them until I think middle of 2020, when, because the process was the retrieval of documents from the warehouses so that they can be sent for electronic storage. So it didn't continue beyond that point.
So from 2018 until 2020, it continued on a month-to-month basis?
On a month-to-month, yes.
2021, you still have not concluded the investigation. Someone processed payment. You don't know who that person is.
So the person who processed the payment is not the person at fault. So the person who was responsible for managing the contracts and looking at the circumstances, what has happened there, That's where we would find who is at fault, not necessarily the person who pays.
So you have not found who was at fault. How long should it take to deal with such a simple matter?
So that's
because a person that process payment gets a request from someone. It takes 3 years to identify an individual.
It doesn't take 3 years, Honorable Khatib, but as I said, we then found in 2020, that's when we issued that instruction for a matter to be investigated. So unfortunately, that I think the processes that we are taking to deal with the cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure and rural expenditure seem to be long, which is one area that we have also been critiqued on, that we need to find a way to deal with these things much faster than we are dealing with them now, because we then have to do the determination process through the Financial Misconduct Committee, and only then do we then start the process of holding people to account. I think that process is taking long, and we have agreed that we need to review it so that we can deal with these things much quicker. Part of the things that also hindered our progress is the fact that we had to do this process of working on cleaning up the register. So it also stopped us from doing a lot of other things because of the limited resources that we had to manage this whole register.
So you honestly want us to believe that it's difficult to identify an official responsible for first property, yet transactions were able to be processed? When it comes to consequence management, it then becomes practically impossible for you to identify individual. Yet in terms of payment processing, such is done without any hindrance. Do you honestly want us to believe that is the case, that you are faced with serious challenge and difficulties to an extent that you are able to make payments, but you don't know who process and request these payments? I'm not saying the person who finally makes the payment, but the initiator of these payments and the person getting invoice from the first property, who then see it as a normal way of doing things. You can't, as a fund, identify the culprit. It's a tedious process. It's very difficult for you to do that. It will require another a couple of months to ultimately get into the bottom of this issue.
So
and when you find that you will give that person a written warning.
So we also then need to, when we do embark on consequence management, we need to make the job of our AR officials easier. So it would be an easier thing to just pick one person in the group of people that are working with us and say, we're going to charge you, and go to a disciplinary hearing and lose a matter because the person is not responsible. But an investigation allows you to be able to look at the underlying issues and along the value chain, who was responsible for what and who did what, because that would also then determine the extent of the sanctions that you're going to give to those that are responsible in the transaction.
When exactly is going to identify this?
Let's just check when it was registered on the register.
And how far is the process?
Pardon me, Honorable Member, I'm just looking at the documents here.
Can you find them?
looking for them on the submitting documentation to the register. So we'll check if he's one of those. But this.
Do you have documentation? Okay, can you ask, I'm sure you're working with a collective. Can you ask your subordinate to assist you with the relevant documentation? I want to go to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But you have submitted to National Treasury a condonation, yet you have not completely dealt with the processes that needs to be followed for you to arrive at a decision to condone. You are fully aware of the National Treasury regulations. You were not given them when you started requesting for condonation. Am I correct that you were privy to National Treasury regulation prior approaching National Treasury for condonation? Is that correct? In terms of National Treasury regulation, they talk about the accountability cycle. They talk about the accountability in terms of in-year monitoring. It talks about the checklist and a lead schedule that on month to month, you need to have an updated checklist. You need to track all your irregular expenditure. You need to keep an update schedule for all your irregular expenditure. Before approaching National Treasury for condonation, you must have satisfied yourself that indeed you first investigation, you have had an official who is accountable to account, there is a sanction given to that particular individual. You have not incurred loss in terms of the fund. Why were all those processes not in this regard when approaching National Treasury? Were you trying to protect certain individuals? Because for you to go and approach National Treasury for condonation, responsible officials ought to have been identified. Perhaps remedial action ought to have been taken. You need to satisfy yourself that there are measures in place to prevent such from occurring in future. And that has not happened in this case. I'm not saying you are protecting individuals, but for you to approach National Treasury condone without following process and procedures, what led to that? And you can't say you only realized when National Treasury told you to look into case by case. You ought to have known before. For the mere fact that you knew that there's National Treasury and it's the point where you go and apply for condonation, it means you were privy to the regulations.
Right. So I think as previously indicated, the matters that we took to National Treasury were the matters where we indicated that historically this register has had a lot of information on it, which we cannot substantiate whether these are indeed valid cases of fruitless or wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure. But they may have been into the register.
That will arise after an investigation. The point that I'm trying to drive home is that you did not conduct an investigation before approaching National Treasury. If you were to say to me, we have done investigation in this number of cases, these cases are difficult to handle, we cannot, therefore we have done everything in terms of the regulation, then we approach it. You are only now saying you're going to look into case by case, only after you have already taken a posture or a decision to condone.
No. So we have cases on the register. We inherited a lot of cases, and also as part of the cleanup, trying to get the correction, we've added, there's a lot of cases that were then added onto the register that relates to priors. I think a lot of these things, some of them dates back even 13 years ago. And when we were looking at these things, first to try and deal with them, we then looked at each case, tried to find the documentation that is relevant, that would enable us to be able to determine what went wrong, who were the responsible parties, so that we can determine a way forward in terms of what are the next steps in dealing with those that are responsible, as well as dealing with the transaction itself. But after years of searching for these documents, we could not find them. So the first thing that we did was to go to Treasury then and say, we have a number of these cases, we can't find documentation and so on. We would just want to de-recognize all these from the register so that we don't keep them in the register. And the advice from Treasury was that, no, don't bring it as a global thing. Tell us the circumstances on each case, even if you have to then request either de-recognition or condonement of these things, or write-off if it's a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Bring it to us on a case-by-case basis. But now when we were preparing this, we also did another check to just see if we can still not find a lot of these documents, so that when we do then submit these cases to Treasury, we can say with certainty that we can't find any documentation that supports the fact that this is a fruitless or irregular expenditure. And as a result, that's why we're recommending for it to be de-recognized from the register. Some of the cases where we could find documentation subsequently and we could prove that these are not cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, or they are not cases of irregular expenditure, we have then gotten the appropriate authority to approve that we did recognize them. I think the reason we also went to National Treasury, because of the quantum of the of these cases and the impact they're having on the financial statements.
So it's true and correct that you went to National Treasury without doing a thorough assessment of each and every case. There are possibilities that some of the documentation can still be found.
No, there isn't. We can't find that document at all. So that is why we're following this process.
So now, what is it that you are following when you are taking each case one by one? What are you hoping to find? If you're saying you are convinced from where you are that there won't be any documentation whatsoever found on these cases.
So we then wanting to get the correct approval to get these cases removed from the register. So that's the process that we're following.
What does the process entail?
That's the process that's advised by Treasury. Give us on each case and tell us what is available, what is not available in this document, so that we can then be able to tell them, so that they can be able to say, okay, yes, this does not. Because ultimately, whatever sits on the register has to comply 100% with the frameworks that have been issued by National Treasury in terms of what is an irregular expenditure and what is a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And most of the things we have on the register, we're unable to say with 100% certainty that they meet that definition that is in the framework of either irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
The dimension data payment of 14.2 million. How was this payment fruitless and wasteful? And who is being held accountable for this expenditure?
Honorable Hadebe, if you may wrap it up, you can come in so we can give Honorable Liz an opportunity. If you can wrap it up, sharp.
Right.
Yes. So I think let me take the dimension data payment as the last one, Chair. Like I said, we're dealing with a decade of maladministration here and misappropriation of funds. So I'll try and wrap up some of the issues, Chair. Commissioner, the dimension data payment, 14.2 million, fruitless and wasteful. Who is being held accountable for this expenditure? And why were the payments on a garnish order not made on time? And lastly, also the official responsible for such. I think, Chair, upon receiving the response, Honorable Liz may proceed and take over.
Thanks. So the first, the dimension data issue. When the fund entered into a contract with Dimension Data in August 2019 for the deployment and configuration of the new system, there was a number of things that also needed to be done as part of the project. So one of those was for the department to, because all the systems of the fund are hosted in the department's data center. So part of the work that needed to happen was also to upgrade the hardware in the data center, so that once the initial phases of the project are complete and Dimension Data is ready to start configuring the system, that configuration can then be done on this new hardware, because it had its own specific requirements which was not aligned to the existing hardware that was in the data center. So by December, December 2019, when the Dimension Data was then ready to start preparing the hardware for configuration of the new system, the department had not finalized its procurement processes for the procurement of the hardware. So after that, we then had to look at an interim process to be able to start the configuration without compromising the timelines. But this process then meant that for the 4 weeks in January, no actual work could then be done instead of starting with the configuration. So that, in actual fact, then means that the contract had to be, in fact, term also then had to extend by further 4 weeks, which had financial implications of these 14 million rands. So the reason why this was classified, was included in the register, is because obviously the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is just something that could have been avoided or something that we should have done something about. So we included it in the register. So the work that's happening now is to then take it through the financial misconduct committee, so that they can then satisfy themselves whether this is indeed confirmed as a case of a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. If was there anything that was within the control of the fund, or is it something that was beyond control and so on, so that we can then apply the framework if we're going to then write it off, and if not, we then be able to then hold those that were responsible for this delay to account.
Honorable Mazambane, may I take this opportunity and hand over to you?
Honorable guests, we are in your hands.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, and a thank you to the Honorable Khatbeba with an H for handing over. Mr. Chairman, let me start by saying hello to the Minister. And I have something specially for you, Minister, which really comes out of the discussion we've had so far this morning. And Karl Marx is reputed to have used this expression. I don't think he was the originator of it, but he once said, "The road to hell is littered with good intentions." And I put it to you, Minister, that over a period of 10 years and more, I'm sure there have been many good intentions. But as Honorable Khatebe described it, it's rotten. It is hell. We have arrived in hell. Having made that introductory remark, Mr. Chairman, let's get to more detailed business. I just want to comment about the kind of panacea that appears to be being put to us about converting to a full 3A entity. At the same time, Minister, and to some extent the DG, are saying that the employee complement of the fund is simply incompetent or not up to the job. So let's put the incompetent word aside, but simply not up to the job. And so the conversion to a 3A entity in itself is to my mind simply an exercise in empire building and won't achieve what needs to be achieved. I think that the argument that market-related salaries are not able to be paid is a fiction, in the sense that it does not excuse people who are appointed to do jobs not to do the jobs as they are appointed to do so. Because much of what is resulted in the disclaimers is basic stuff. No one needs a PhD to store documents. So, and yet, Mr. Chairman, let me just refer you to the annual report for the year that we're looking at. And forgive me for peering because my eyes are still not up to scratch. But if you look at page 96, there were a total of 7 employees who were given warnings. Now let me take you back a bit to page 91. So 7 employees were given warnings. In page 91, you'll see that there are 815 employees in the head office. The annual report seems to be silent about how many employees there are in the provincial offices. So we don't know that unless the DG or the commissioner can tell us that. So of 815 plus employees, only 7 warnings were issued in the entire year. Not a single verbal warning, 4 written warnings, and 3 dismissals. So since 2009, when I became an MP, I have heard on a nauseatingly repeated basis the question about consequences. Here we have an entity that is in hell. And in the entire year, only 7 warnings or disciplinary were taken. Of the 3 dismissals, Commissioner, who were those dismissals and what were they dismissed for, please?
Thank you, Honorable List. So the 7 dismissals that we had in 2019. So the seven cases where consequence management has taken place, where we had 3 cases of. So the 3 cases where officials were dismissed, it was for soliciting bribery. So all 3 cases was the same matter.
Thank you. So none of the dismissals were related to the malfeasance in administration that's taken place over the last 10 years. So is it safe for me to say then that no one in that year was dismissed for poor performance in their jobs?
That has been one of the biggest, actually, here also to the challenges that the compensation fund has. So issues around soliciting and so on. Those are some of the things that some officials would have utilized to compromise controls in the fund and leading to where we are now. So that's why such action has been, so it has a direct link to some of the problems that we have in the fund.
Okay, so what you're saying then that it's not a question of skills, it's a questions of basic crookery. So no matter what the skills are, fraud is fraud. Is that right?
That's correct. So even if we implement systems, if the so one of the key things, once while we improve the system controls, we also then look at also process controls, needing to make sure that those are intact. And it's because of the control that we put in place that we're then able to detect and pick up some of these malfeasance that is happening to be able to deal with it.
In these three cases, who was the employee?
We will get the. I don't have the names on my record here. Honorable, get that back.
Mr. Chairman, sir, in terms of the returns of earnings, the website has basically been dysfunctional for many years, and I have personal experience of it. What is the backlog on as we stand now? How many are there outstanding, overdue?
So we won't have that record now. We are currently in the period or the season of filing of returns. Right, so where we're going to do the assessment. So we'll know at the end of May once the filing season ends. And this is a process that also is self-administered because employers would then submit their returns on the ROE system and the assessment then happens electronically. So but we will know at the end of the year how many of the out of the active employers that we have in the compensation fund system that have submitted returns of earnings and have been assessed.
So, Commissioner, so what you're saying to me is that for the year that we're looking at, this 2019-20 year, every single employee had submitted a return of earnings. There were none outstanding at the end of that period or even now as we speak. For that particular year and prior years, there are no outstanding returns of earnings.
The way outstanding returns, if you look at our annual performance report, it shows out of the total active employers, the 400,000 active employers, only half of those submitted their returns, and the others did not submit, which brings that problem that we spoke about earlier of compliance. Because if an employer has not been assessed, it's because an employer has not submitted a return. And if the employer has not submitted a return, then that is non-compliance too. The COIT legislation.
Okay, so as that was as at the end of the financial year 1920, what is that situation now for the prior years? Forget about the year that returns are now due. For that was 200,000 for the year before. You're not giving me figures for the 10 years. I'm sure they are. And I'm really not interested in the employer compliance. We know that employers will from time to time not be compliant, but I'm wanting to know the stats. How many of the return of earnings that should have been submitted for the years prior to the current year are still outstanding? And it could be up to 10 years that someone hasn't submitted, because it seems that your administration simply doesn't follow up on these and just waits for submissions. Do you not have that figure?
I do not have the figure for 10 years, so I would have the figure for last year and we'll have the figure for this year once the assessment season has been completed. Okay. One of the things I indicated was that there has been a creation of a payroll inspection unit in the department. The sole objective of that unit is to be able to address this issue of non-compliance by employers and non-registration, non-submission of returns and non-payment once the return has been paid. So that problem is being addressed through the inspections.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I mean, if it was your business and your clients, and you're a monopoly in this, you've got no competition, simply didn't provide, I'm sure you would have taken action 10 years ago when the first one did it. And the fact that you don't know which employers, or how many employers at least, you won't know individuals, but at least how many employers or and how many returns are outstanding is just incredulous, quite honestly. It is just incredulous. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what we're achieving with this particular hearing, but I'll proceed because it seems to me that it's not just a matter of processes and it's a lot more than that. For instance, you gave us a long story just now, Commissioner, about the classification of sectors and being an issue with returns of earnings. I put it to you that that is a nonsense, I'm afraid. Returns of earnings are returns of earnings. Doesn't matter what classifications they are. And then the provisional assessments is not something new. It's a very old part of the way the Compensation Commission works. You don't need a submission from an employer to raise a provisional assessment. And very often you do it and you make massive assessments. So it is not an excuse to come to this committee and to say that these are the reasons why the returns of earnings have not been processed. It's simply incompetence. Mr. Chairman, let me talk about the call center. If you can't tell me how many returns of earnings are outstanding, and you can only tell me for a particular year, can you tell me what your email backlog is? How many emails are awaiting a response from the Commission?
I don't have that information with me.
Do you have the information anywhere? Do you get a report as the Commissioner on at least a monthly basis on the performance of your call center and the email center, where whoever deals with emails, that this month we received so many emails, we have responded to so many, we have a backlog of so many. The UIF was able to tell us that at the drop of a hat when we visited them a couple of months ago. Are you saying you can't do the same?
Well, if the information had been requested beforehand, we would have been able to then provide such information, because we do have dedicated email addresses that clients can send information to, and the call center team do keep stats then of how many of them have been attended, how many have not been attended. We do track that also even in our EXCO as part of the reporting that happens in terms of the turnaround times in the call center.
Mr. Chairman, can we get that information while we proceed? Commissioner, could you ask someone in the back room there to get that information for us, please? In terms of the call center and the emails, let me give you an example here. Right. So on the 13th of July, 2018, at 10:53 a.m., if you want the time as well, I sent an email requesting details of an employer who had been attempting to register as an employer for about 3 years at that point. The registration had been submitted over and over, and so in 2018 I asked for the details. I got no response. On the 27th of May, I'm battling with reading here, 2020, I then asked again. I did get a reply to that email. 27th of May, I got a reply on the 26th of August, 2020, simply acknowledging receipt. There were further emails. You can probably see them. To date, what are we today? 19th of May, 2021. I have yet to get a substantive reply to the emails that started in 2018. investigating. Why is that?
Chair, I wouldn't know why the specific matter has not been responded to. Safe to say that we know, I think one of the biggest challenges we know we've had has been delays in registration of employers. And it's against that reason why in the ROE online system, 2 years ago, we introduced an online registration platform so that employers don't have to wait for the compensation fund to process their registration. This registration can be done online, and the employer can then instantly be able to get their COID registration number so that they can then be able to submit returns and continue to transact with the compensation fund. Part of the restructuring that we did in response to the skills audit was also to be able to address this area of employer services, because we saw that's where a lot of the bottlenecks were. And we created a separate employer services unit to be able to then to be more responsive to employers with regards to a number of their issues that they're raising. And because of that creation of that separated employer services unit, we're starting to see a lot of feedback. We give responses. Some responses that we give may not be the responses that are liked by employers, but we do then give those responses. And if people are not happy with the response, they obviously then have the right to be able to object to such, and we also do attend to them.
Yeah. So what you're saying then is it should be very easy for whoever receives my email to go onto your system and give me a response if it's working. And I put it to you that I doubt that your system is working very well or all the time. But be that as it may. In terms of your claims, can you give the committee some stats about cleaning, awaiting processing? And on average, it's not possible to be exact, but on average, over perhaps a year, how many claims per day does the claims department handle?
The 3,000 claims a year that we process as the fund. Those are injury claims, and the medical invoices that we receive annually is roughly about on average about 800,000 medical claims that are submitted to the compensation fund on an annual basis. In the last financial year, because of the impact of COVID, the lockdown, and the fact that the workplaces weren't as active for the full year, we had a slightly reduced number of claims that were submitted to the fund. So the amount of claims that the fund processed last year was about 99,000. Those are the registered claims in the fund. If you look at the May 17th, which is yesterday, we're sitting about 17,831. So these are claims that are being worked on currently by a number of the officials. And then we also then have about 92,000 claims that would have been submitted. It may not even be claims that yes before then, where, for example, the claim has been submitted, but there is with such a claim.
Thank you, Commissioner. So in terms of claims, we're looking at a backlog of about 110,000. And on medical invoice claims?
Chair, I wouldn't call this a backlog because these are claims that we... ...education, other than you've waiting for information, you have made contact with the employer, so you now wait for the information to be submitted so that you can process a claim further. With regards to medical claims, so we of the 618,000 claims that we received last year, I'm just trying to get there. So of the invoices that we received, so we were able to then pay about 617,000 of these claims that were paid within the financial year. So what we had at the end of the financial year as invoices that still had paid of the 172 for the claims were that on the 30th of March has not been
situation now. You got it for the other claims. What was the situation yesterday as for medical claims?
So I wouldn't have a situation as yesterday, but I have medical claims as at the end of April. So the information from medical
$64,000. Presumably that would equate to, it's 10%, so that's like 2 months' claims of the 618,000.
Roughly around this.
In the year that we're looking at, your annual report indicates that there were a number of, and let me give you exact number, 51 employees got rewards. What were these rewards for, given the chaos and the mess that the commission, the compensation fund is in? What did 51 employees get rewards for?
So that's the, so there's different people.
I think.
Yeah, responsible for it does not necessarily mean that we don't have pockets of excellence in terms of some officials that performed far in excess of the norm. So it's, I think it's in such instances where performance is then rewarded, good performance is rewarded. That's why there's these 51 cases of people that would have received performance awards.
Will you submit a list of those people and what the each one was, please, Commissioner?
We'll be able to do that.
In that particular year, were bonuses paid to employees?
To
all employees? Was there a bonus scheme? How does your bonus scheme work? Forget about rewards, which are sort of ad hoc decisions, so, I assume.
All civil servants, as part of our conditions of service, are entitled to a savings check.
Yeah.
The bonus that we see on the financial statements would then relate to the certain check that gets paid to all officials working in the fund.
Irrespective of the performance?
Yes.
Did you get a bonus?
I structured for one, yes.
Sure. Okay, thank you. There was 10 million rand spent on training costs. Given the degree of skills shortage and so on, and continuing chaos at the fund, how do we determine how to do the training? What sort of training is it? It doesn't appear to have made much difference. I mean, you've basically spent an average per me train in that particular year. What exactly is this training?
This is a training that responds. I referred to earlier to the skills body. So this is an informed the body. Because those are some of the skills that the fund, so there had to be training that had to be made sure that once people are using this, they're familiar with the clinical coding terminology and the use of clinical terms in assessing the team.
The fund, the question really is why, Minister, has the DG not been held accountable for the sins of the compensation fund? What we hear from both you, Minister, and from the DG is about plans and good intentions. But surely, as the accounting officer of the DG, must be held accountable for the mess of the fund.
Thank you very much. Can you get that response, please?
For all the issues I've been raising them with the DG. Knowing very well and led by the DG as an accounting officer. I've also indicated that of consequent management, because he's the accounting officer. I'm very clear about that. But I've also taken the point that at operational levels, from the commissioner and how that is also structured, that's where things are being cooked. However, I've indicated that if needs be, to deal with this consequent management, I have to start with the DG. That I've communicated very clearly, which therefore says he must ensure that the commissioner and those in the management of the fund, they are putting their act together. And I think some of the issues were as a result of his initiatives. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Minister. Honourable Khadeva started early in the meeting talking about warming up with a cup of coffee, and perhaps a little Johnny Walker with you in the old assembly is something to look forward to as a warming up. Thank you very much.
Indeed, indeed. Johnny Walker.
And why did you close that place? Okay, thank you. Sorry, Chair.
Come back from there. You can walk after the meeting. Colleagues, are there any questions from members?
Chair? I would also want members to consider our proposal to ensure that we give a meet to our work, that there has to be a speed in terms of the fund instituting forensic audit in these issues, especially payments without documentation. We need the minister to come out very clear and unequivocal to us whether or not such forensic audit will be instituted, and perhaps I would support the view as also clearly outlined and recommended by the AG that they must appear before us on quarterly basis if we were to change the status quo. So that's the proposal, and I'd love the members to also touch base on my firm proposal in this regard, Chair. Thank you.
No, that is fine. We're going to come to that as part of our way forward. Colleagues, are there any other questions or colleagues want to make comments so that we can concretize on the recommendation and resolution and adopt it today, and so that the minister may leave with a clear mandate in terms of our expectations? So, colleagues, I'll hand over to you.
Mr. Chairman, it was certain information that we requested from the Commissioner. If it's not available now, can we give a deadline of when we'll get it?
Let's give it a week, Honourable Lees. Today is Wednesday, so next week, Thursday, close of business. All the information required. I know that we're all navigating budget votes in the department itself, and so. So, DG Commissioner, all the information required, there's a close of business to Zambia. Any further comments?
No, we find, Chair, no comments. Thank you.
Okay. Colleagues, let me make this proposal. They will not make this proposal. Let's tie it down on this proposal. Firm it up.
I think that the DG must tell us about those that ought to have been held accountable.
All right, DG, let's hand over to you. Right,
people must be held. I said people must be held accountable. In fact, quite frankly, heads needs to roll, Chair.
Okay. All right, DG, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. That's what we stated by the AG. The recommendations, we will implement them. Those that have not done what they're supposed to do, we will take steps to make sure that they're held accountable. That's the intention, Chair.
All right, let's do this, colleagues. I hear what Honorable Hadeb is saying in wanting the DG to consequence management. But let's concretize it as follows. The SIUs here, colleagues, We are settled here with, as I was saying in the opening remarks, and as we know, 10 years of, 8 years of a disclaimer, 2 for an adverse. So in the 10 years, really, there has been absolutely no change, none whatsoever, zero. And the same individuals have been in charge. Quite frankly, Minister, the question that we should be asking you is whether the DG and the Commissioner are fit for purpose and competent to the challenges that besiege. I remember that in the 5th Parliament, we actually even went to the Compensation Fund. We raised these issues and all sorts of commitments were made and they've come to naught. Year in, year out, the audit outcomes are pointing to the same shortcomings and same deficiencies. So it's either nobody cares or nobody takes Parliament seriously. Well, nobody bothered about the well-being of the fund, that things continue in the same way. Either one of those options is totally unacceptable, highest order. And none of the responses today, as far as I'm concerned, have given us any comfort to allay our anxieties and concerns about the compensation fund. It's becoming tiring and absolutely nauseating to be saying the same thing over and over again to the compensation fund. Worst of all, to the same individuals. So, Minister, I think there is full agreement insofar as the committee is having pointed out this morning that we are calling for a full-scale forensic investigation into the compensation fund for the 10-year period that we are talking about. And we are giving you, colleagues, I think 30 days, Minister, like we did yesterday on the issues of the National Skills Fund, to lay out a roadmap of that forensic investigation. Or also refer the matter to the SIU and subject it to a proclamation. Minister, in 30 days, we expect that you will make a submission to the committee on the modus operandi that will be employed for the purposes of a forensic investigation, for you to report to us how it will be done, who will be doing it, and the terms of reference of that forensic investigation. We are expecting that the audit-related matters will be central to that, the audit outcomes, the audit plans, because your internal audit is very, very functional. They have reported these issues, but nobody is listening to them. And this just smacks of coordinated corruption. The structures and institutions be there, but we're not going to comply. And then the second point, Minister, is that we are calling on you to have a performance assessment of the DG and the Commissioner of the Fund to make a determination as to whether they are actually capable and competent and fit for purpose insofar as these matters are concerned. On the other hand, we're dealing with headaches of the UIF in the same portfolio. Perennial headaches which consistently and persistently mount on top of one another. Every year, with the same individuals for 5 years plus, there is no change. Absolutely none. Something has got to give, Minister. And if you are not going to bite the bullet here, decisions about the individual's consent, then we will make recommendations accordingly. But at this point in time, I think it suffices to say that investigation with the cooperation of the SIU and for the minister to submit to us in 30 days the roadmap and the modus operandi, terms of reference and so on of how this forensic investigation will be done and for a performance assessment of the DG and the Commissioner of the Compensation Fund. So today is the 19th. Minister will request to get that no later than the 20th of June, and to also draw your attention to the fact that whilst Parliament is going on recess, We have been granted permission as this committee to meet as and when circumstances dictate that we should be dealing with issues. The issues of the compensation fund are of a priority. Frankly, we have tolerated long enough the commitments and the pledges that things are going to turn around, and it all amounted to naught. The situation, Minister, is totally unequivocal. Yet, is committed to no change. I hope, and then see what the minister submits to the committee on 28th. A conclusion which is going to turn things around at the compensation fund. If I'm still chair next year, I will pull my hair out if I have to sit here again and listen to the same audit outcomes from the same individuals on the same institution, just absolutely no movement on issues. So let's circumvent it, Minister, and subject this to a full-scale forensic investigation, which will come out with the necessary recommendation. So I think, colleagues, we can leave it at that. And also the fact that you've not tabled to Parliament the annual report, that is something we are flagging as well. There seems to be that glitch, Minister, if you can follow that up. Parliament's records somehow do not seem to reflect the availability of the annual report on its records. Minister, may I hand over to you for any concluding remarks and the response to the summation of the committee, and then we will bring the meeting to an end. But from our side, we're just done talking. We've had it, actually, with the compensation fund, because these issues have been raised from the fourth parliament, fifth parliament, and we're still dealing with the same issues now. Ultimately, something has got to give. Minister, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members. As I said at the beginning, we see what you have raised as constructive criticisms, which are meant to for us to correct the wrongs. And that's what accountability is all about. And I believe in one thing, Chairperson. If you want to deal with the wrong things first is to acknowledge the wrongs. And I think we have done that. We acknowledge that chaos. And once we have acknowledged that, we are going to be able to deal with it. And we have added on some of the blind spots, which we are not looking at. And I want, as we close, to assure this committee of our commitment to address the findings of the AG, as well as to conduct this organization review I'm talking about. Is difficult. And I should also that with the Deputy Minister and the teacher, of course, we are committed to this regular monitoring of progress towards the implementation of the is that in this way, the internal audit, the audit committee, whose work was commended by the AG. We also support the proposal of the compensation fund reporting regular against the plans and the targets to the SCOPA, to the portfolio committee, select committee, and the office of the AG. And Chair, we will definitely take the instructions of a full-scale forensic audit, but we need to be very, very careful that we don't come up with very broad terms of reference where there will be an unending forensic audit. People continue to make money. And as you have indicated, in 30 days, we'll make that submission to the committee on the areas we have mentioned, from the roadmap, modus operandi, in terms of reference, who is going to do it. We have to follow the PFM procedures in appointing that. Definitely, the issue of performance assessment of both the DG and the commissioner, these are already there in my own performance agreement with the president and between myself. We will report progress to SCOPA not later than the 20th of June. Thank you very much. We take this as constructive and as in the interest of us accounting about the public funds. Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members.
All right, Minister, thank you very much. I think we can leave it at that. Colleagues, I would like to thank Honourable Hadeb and Honourable Liz, who have who have peeled the onion to bring to life the audit outcomes, demonstrating why we are concerned as a committee about the state of affairs of the compensation fund. And so I think they've been very thorough in that, and the response have been, well, just plainly weak and have been an indication of the extent of the collapse of the institution. It's just it's not a pretty picture, actually, what's happening at the compensation fund. So, Minister, we will await your report on the 20th of June, the 20th of June, or 20th of June is a Sunday, Minister. So on the 21st of June, Monday the 21st of June, will be fine in that regard. And then the responses which have been required from the DG and the Commissioner to reach us next week, Thursday, close of business, as part of our information collection exercise. And then we will leave it at that. Let me take this opportunity, colleagues, and thank you for your attendance and participation this morning. And there are budget votes, of course, at 1400 hours today, and some colleagues are participating in by-elections. So thank you very much. I would like to thank you, Minister, for your presence today, knowing that it's a Thursday, Wednesday, and some of your colleagues will tell us that it's Cabinet Day, but we maintain that it's also Parliament Day. And so we thank you for your presence as well today, and the Deputy Minister who left a short while ago. To the DG Commissioner and the rest of the team, thank you to you as well for your appearance at this hearing this morning. And we will then bring the meeting to an end. SIU and AG, as always, Spamangazos has been, we are truly appreciative of your continued support, cooperation, and information sharing with us on these very complex and difficult matters. Colleagues, the notification of next week will go out this afternoon and tomorrow, and we will finalize as to whether we're proceeding with CETA next week, Wednesday, or not. On that note, colleagues, have a wonderful day ahead, and thank you very much. The meeting is
over. Long live the chair!
Long live the chair! Long live the chair!
Long live the minister.
All right, colleagues, have a good one. Sharp, sharp.
Epic.
Negative.
Yes, all but Fumenele now in the text, Yole.
Jilo by Uzandesa Chu, should he still
have to say something for the minister?
Thank you, guys.
No, but we appreciate that both you and the DM have stayed until the end. Some departments and entities were struggling. It indicates the level of seriousness and commitment in terms of dealing with the issues.
Thank you. Thank you, Comrade Dix.
All right.
So, Sangana, what constituency is Comrade Dix?
On the 26th, at the court case.
I'm out.
No, when you are deployed in what, 38? Okay, thanks, guys.
Yes, very sir.